This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Monday edition of the Noon Business Hour on this last trading day of the year. I'm Cisco Cotto. Lots of clouds and rain in Chicagoland, and this will be sticking around for several hours as we're right about our high of 40 degrees. This system slowly but surely moving through. Later on tonight for your New Year's Eve, if you're headed out, it should be okay. Maybe a few sprinkles or flurries, but this significant rain will be out of the area by later on tonight. Overnight low of 26, and then for your New Year's Day, a high near 30 degrees, lots of clouds, and maybe a few flurries, but no rain or snow in the forecast for New Year's Day. Right now, 37 at O'Hare, 39 Midway, and 40 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, President Trump says U.S. and Chinese negotiators have made big progress, and investors are buying on that news. The Dow is up 222 points, or almost 1%. NASDAQ adding 42, S&P up 16. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index gaining 0.5%. For the month, though, the three major indices are down 9% or more, and they're wrapping up a year of losses as well, with the S&P 500 down almost 7% here in 2018. Oil is also finishing a brutal year. The price is down about 21% so far this year. It'll be the first annual loss for oil since 2015. Right now, crude futures are at $45.33 a barrel. And America's factories have been humming, but they're ending the year on a down note. Five Federal Reserve indices of regional manufacturing slumped in December. That's the first time they've all fallen since May 2016, a sign that factories are concerned about the impact of President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum imports and about $250 billion worth of Chinese products. Back to you, Cisco.
Thanks, Elisa. Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, economist Peter Morici will join us to talk about not only how the economy went in 2018, but what we can expect in 2019, especially as this trade war continues. Newspapers under attack by cyber criminals, and it is Stock Picker Monday. An investing pro will join us to give you some advice for your portfolio. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Several major newspapers, including the Chicago Tribune, were the targets of cyber attacks over the weekend. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, we're wrapping up the year with a look at the overall U.S. and global economies. Joining us on the International Autos Orland Park Business Line, Peter Morici, Professor Emeritus at the University of Maryland, also a syndicated columnist. You can find him on Twitter, at PMorici1. Peter, let's begin with sort of a look ahead at 2019. Based on the way things are going, what do you expect for 2019 here in the U.S.?
Well, I do expect that the President and President Xi will come up with some kind of deal on trade. He's under a lot of pressure in China to do something. They're not as militant as it sounds right now. And President Trump put so much emphasis on the stock market as a measure of his performance. And since stocks, for reasons unknown to me, there's this hysteria out there. We just heard some of it from one of your reporters about the tariffs, that they'll likely make some kind of deal. Whether it really affects the trade deficit with China is something else. Now, so we have that. My feeling is this budget impasse will pass. And the new Democrats that have been elected are much less radical and militant than, say, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And they basically were elected to solve problems. So they're going to want to work with the president. So I think we're going to see things like an infrastructure bill and stuff like that. In that context, I see the economy growing more slowly than last year, but still growing faster than it did during the Obama years, someplace between 2.5% and 3%. And I think that's good. I see corporate profits rising. You know, again, the hysteria. They said in the Wall Street Journal this morning that, you know, profits are going to grow more slowly than was thought last year. No kidding. We don't have a tax cut this year, but they'll still grow. So my feeling, the outlook is that once the deck is cleared on these temporary traumas, that the economy will move forward and we'll be okay. Now, if Mr. Trump and Mr. Z can't get together and the Democrats want to play stop Trump at all costs again, you know, then it's going to be a different outlook. But you have to make some guesses about the political environment to talk about the economic environment.
And do you think that there would be Wall Street, maybe job or other pressures that might force the two sides, Democrats and Republican, to actually get something done? I mean, if the economy starts slipping or the markets tank even more, or there's people out of work, it seems like that would be the pressure to actually deal together.
Well, if there was any other administration but the Trump administration, I would say yes. But Democrats, you know, that are in charge, the Schumers and the Pelosis, have made it their business just to oppose Trump, not to acknowledge him as a legitimate president. Now, the question is whether, you know, these newly elected moderate Democrats bring enough force to bear on Pelosi. Because if the House starts coming up with bills, then Schumer's going to have to respond. He's going to have to start behaving like a reasonable human being, not like a child who wants the keys to the car. You know, I've got a message for Mr. Schumer. If he wants to make national policy, maybe he should run for president. We'll see how many votes he can get outside of New York City. But in any case, my feeling is a lot depends on whether it's the supposed Trump at all cost business, because if it's that, they'll push the economy into a recession for the sake of winning in 2020, because Trump will get blamed. But my feeling is that the Congress will behave more responsibly and something will be doable.
So you talked about China and how you think that there might be a deal to be had there, though you're not sure it'll make any sort of a difference on the trade deficit. What would you like to see out of some sort of a deal with China, and what do you think is actually reasonably possible?
Well, I would want something that's very deep and comprehensive so that it's enforceable and we really could ensure that the markets open up and we can sell there, that they stop pirating our intellectual property and so on and so forth. You know, we tried that for years with the Japanese. The only thing that solved the Japanese problem was Japan going into stagnation. So my feeling is a real deal with China from simply negotiating a trade agreement, you know, saying these are the new rules, isn't going to work. You'd have to do something that sets benchmarks for the trade deficit, saying this is how much the trade deficit can be. We can't let it get any bigger than this. If not, then we impose bigger tariffs, that kind of thing. You know, by the way, your reporter just said manufacturers are concerned about tariffs. No. Most of the tariffs that Mr. Trump put on are at 10%. The yuan against the dollar since April is down by 9.5%. Anybody who's paying more for materials other than steel out of China has basically, you know, been sold a bill of goods. I mean, something's wrong here for them to be. It's just nonsense. Because the currency swing should have compensated. My feeling is that, you know, if you ask a tomato grower in the Connecticut Valley why the frost came too soon this year and he couldn't sell enough plump ones to New York restaurants, you know what he'd tell you? The steel tariff. It's like that woman you have in the Midwest that runs that large car company, Barrer or something. She, when she decided she was going to close four or five plants, she blamed the steel tariff. She didn't tell you that in addition to the 25% tariff on steel, she's crowding all of her production under the 25% truck tariff. And I didn't see her marching up Capitol Hill to do anything about that. But what's more, in a car, the impact of the steel tariff is about $200. The average transactions price of a car is $36,000. That's noise in the price of a vehicle, absolute noise. What you've got in the Midwest is a continuing incompetence among the CEOs of the three major automakers. They simply haven't figured out how to compete with a Camry. And if you look at that thing, it's really not that complicated. It's just that they really have stupid people running Detroit. So it's not the tariff. It's not the tariff at all.
Peter Morici, we have to let you go there, but we look forward to having you back. Peter Morici, Professor Emeritus at the University of Maryland, also a syndicated columnist on Twitter, @PMorici1.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A cyber attack caused major printing and delivery disruptions Saturday at the Chicago Tribune and other major newspapers. To talk about it, we welcome Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, also a member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based here in Chicago. Jerry, I know details are still coming in on this, and I'm sure they will for several weeks, but what do we know so far? What happened to these newspapers?
Well, first thing we know, it's a specific type of ransomware called the Ryuk, R-Y-U-K. And this ransomware is a hybrid of other types of malware that have been out there that have been tied to Russia in the past. Now, at this point, we know it came from another country. We're not sure where, but based on this information, it would appear that it may have originated from Russia. The other thing we know about this is that this was not an accidental type of attack. Ryuk is not a spam type of malware that gets just sent out to everybody. It's specifically targeted. So these newspapers were specifically targeted by the adversary in order to bring them down. And in addition to the Tribune, I mean, the Wall Street Journal was also affected by this. So it was a major cyber event that was targeted specifically to these newspaper organizations in order to disrupt their ability to report the news.
So what is it that these newspapers could have done to prevent this? Is there anything that they could have done to prevent something like this from happening?
Well, the good part was the largest outage was merely a few hours, 3 or 4 hours. So these companies are already doing a lot from a cybersecurity standpoint. They have good perimeter-based security solutions. The problem is with any of these, you get one person who clicks on it, and that device is then going to be corrupted, and it's going to immediately start communicating out to other devices on your network. So it's very difficult to be 100% secure, but the fact that the largest outage was 3 or 4 hours shows that they're really doing a pretty good job at taking care of it. The next step, just like we tell all of our clients and people that we work with, is to watch your email solutions, install solutions that do not allow the transmission of attachments or embedded links. So if you ever get an attachment from somebody, you really shouldn't open it. You should be calling them saying, hey, you want me to get this document from you? I want to pull it from you. I don't want you to push it to me. I want to get on your server and download it from there. And that's how to stop these types of things. This ability to send people attachments via email is what the hackers are using to corrupt and infect all of the machines that are out there.
Good insight as always. Thanks, Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions. Still ahead, a report on the markets from Bloomberg. Later, personal finance resolutions for the new year. WBBM News Time, 12:25. A check of the markets from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are finishing the month and the year on an up note. The Dow is higher by 246 points or 1%, and we are at 23,308. NASDAQ advancing 53, S&P up 20. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 0.75%. As the partial U.S. government shutdown enters its second week, the lack of data from the Department of Agriculture is sending commodities traders to Twitter and elsewhere to get crop information. Most of the department's key reports, including figures on export sales, have been halted since the shutdown began on December 22nd. Crude oil futures, some choppy trade today at $45.31 a barrel, down about 21% in 2018. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
After being mixed early, we have lower grain prices across the board. March corn down 2.25 at 373.25. New crop December down 1.5 at 396. March beans down 2.75, 951.25, with new crop November's down 3 at 932.75, and July wheat down 7.25 at 519, all down at the moment. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Markets are a little higher. We'll see what's moving Wall Street. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of suggestions from an investing pro. There's time to make some financial resolutions ahead of the arrival of the new year at midnight. Bears fans gear up for the team's first playoff game in 8 years. It's against the Eagles Sunday afternoon. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren takes a step toward a presidential run in 2020. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 264 points, the NASDAQ up 54, and the S&P is up 21. Oil today is flat. This rain is hovering. It's going to linger for several more hours, but it should be out of the way for New Year's Eve party plans. Right now, 37 O'Hare, 39 at Midway, 40 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets are doing all right on this final day of the trading year. We're joined now on the International Autos Orland Park business line by Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors here in Chicago. Jack, each of the major indexes is up. What do you make of this last trading day?
Well, it's certainly quiet trading, Cisco, but like the trend, looks like we're trying to make a little progress in Congress with reopening the government, likely to fall flat on the president's desk if it doesn't include border wall funding. So I'm not sure how much traction that gets. But all in all, certainly a positive note, especially since investor attitudes had been so poor. And I think that's something that I've been studying and have been writing, in fact, writing about today.
So talk to us about that. So investor attitudes are poor. Is that based on the way things are today or what they expect for 2019? Maybe
sure.
Both?
it's probably a little both. A lot of the work that I'm using relies on a weekly survey that the AAIE, actually a Chicago organization, the American Association of Individual Investors, sends a survey to its members every week asking them, are they bullish, bearish, or neutral? And this survey has gone back years and years. I think I have data all the way back to the mid-1980s. What I found is, probably not a surprise, bearish investors have very low expectations. And so in a world where the market is really a reflection of reality and expectations, you could argue that having bearish investors, it's much easier to jump over those expectations than very bullish investors. And if you go back a year, what we found was investors were extremely bullish. And, of course, we know what happened in the markets this year. Going back to 2016, the beginning of that year, investors were widespread bearish, and we had a 20% return. So perhaps going into 2019 with such widespread pessimism could set us up for some positive surprises this year.
Do you see some of the things that you mentioned? You have the trade issues with China and other nations. Obviously, you have this partial government shutdown. Do you see that as something that all of these things is something that are truly foundationally a problem, or is it just people are a little scared right now? Things have gone well for so long; they're just sort of waiting for something bad to happen. I mean, is this a genuine reason to be pessimistic?
Well, I think there is a difference between risk and uncertainty, and what we have isn't so much a risk as it is really an uncertainty. And the good news here is these uncertainties are really all man-made, right? I mean, these are treaties that could be written. These are bills that could be signed. So I think that in many respects, when we have a downdraft so far, from peak to trough was the fastest decline that I've seen. Over the course of 2018, when you have that kind of a decline against a backdrop of, modest economic growth and nothing systemic, I don't think the wheels are falling off our financial system. I think perhaps it's a little bit overdone.
So what do you expect from earnings looking ahead to 2019? Do you expect them to still be at least fairly positive?
Yeah. In fact, if you look at even the slightly downgraded earnings of Q1 and Q2, we're still looking at high single digits for the S&P 500. In fact, I would argue once we start getting into earnings season, and that's going to be the second week of January, and investors finally have something really that they can latch onto, not just these headlines, if you will, I think that could be motivation for investors to get a little more optimistic and perhaps put some money into the market.
And what kind of advice beyond that, beyond thinking that they may have a change of mind here, what sort of advice do you give given what we've experienced in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you realize that you don't want to put your checking account money into the S&P 500. I think that is a pretty easy lesson to understand. But on the other hand, if you do have a 5-7 year time horizon, you can now buy stocks that are 18% to 20% cheaper than they were just 6 months ago. So I think from that perspective, you have to look at it as sort of a price. If you see a price of a grocery item that's 20% off, you should be more attractive to buy it than really run away from it.
Yeah, is this where, very briefly, is this where the phrase dollar cost averaging really becomes a big deal, really shows why it's so positive?
It does. You're certainly, you would buy fewer shares of stock when stock prices are high, and you'd end up buying more shares of stock when prices are low. And so over time, you filter your way into the market and really try not to look at your statement every month.
Always good analysis. Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors. Thanks for being with us. Up next, financial resolutions for the new year.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The calendar will turn to 2019 at midnight, so there's still some time to make some financial resolutions for the new year. We welcome Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Oak Brook. Mark, how important is it, as we talk about resolutions for the new year, how important is it to plan, to at least have some sort of, whether it's a spending plan, investing plan, whatever it is, to actually think about it ahead of time?
Yeah, that's a great question, Cisco. There's just a bunch of data out there about the power of written goals. So studies by Harvard University, just a written goal just is far more likely to be achieved than one that you just think about. Jim Carrey, the actor, he famously wrote himself a check for $10 million for acting services rendered, and he would carry that around in his pocket as a reminder of his goal. So it doesn't need to be a full-blown financial plan. We, of course, would love everybody to have a formal financial plan, but even something just on the refrigerator about different goals. Write them down. You're far more likely to achieve them.
A lot of people wrapped up in credit card debt and regularly using them. Sometimes it's for miles or cash back or just because of financial necessity. Any advice on that? What do we do if credit cards are a regular part of our lives?
Yeah, so there's no doubt that there's a convenience factor of having the cards in your pocket. But I'd say for anybody out there that's having trouble from time to time not paying balances in full each month, maybe take a month and go on a credit boycott and only pay for your living expenses, going out to eat with cash. So identify what number it is that you'd like to spend for that month. Take it in cash and leave the credit cards at home. That might help reveal where you might be having some excess spending in life because of the convenience of those cards.
So that's for someone, even if they handle credit cards well. By that I mean they pay it off every month and don't really get into a lot of that high interest debt. You still think that 1 month fast from credit cards is something that's wise?
So I think it varies, but yeah, I think it always makes sense to do a double check. Am I spending at an appropriate level? Because any financial plan, it involves multi-factors in investing, but spending is certainly a big factor.
Let's talk about life insurance, something that a lot of people don't want to think about, but it's because, of course, how does that money get made, right? But it's something that's very important if you have family members who are dependent upon you.
So that's a huge one for anybody that's had a family change this year. Welcome the new addition to the family. Really encourage somebody to evaluate their life insurance needs, because term insurance especially can just be just dirt cheap and a great way to protect your family if, you know, tomorrow is not promised to any of us. And so if something does happen to you, to know that your family is going to be provided for. So taking a look at term insurance, that's a great place to start.
One of the pieces of advice that I read was to actually go to the doctor, go to the dentist. I mean, we often talk about saving money and investing money well, but there are ways that actually spending money can be pretty good for you.
Yeah, so I think what you're leading into there is preventative actions that we can all take. And so, yeah, going regularly to the doctor or dentist for periodic checkups, that dovetails into a financially fit lifestyle. Sometimes can go hand in hand with a physically fit lifestyle. And so getting yourself to the gym, and I'm speaking to myself more than I am anybody else right now.
But glad you're not talking to me. That's all I have to say.
No, I got a lot of work to do on this one. But yeah, getting yourself to the gym on a regular basis should be part of just all of our lives.
So that's not only a quality of life, but you're also talking about potentially saving on medical bills down the line if you're taking care of yourself.
Exactly. So money you don't spend is a little hard to measure. But certainly there's plenty of data out there that shows the more physically fit that we all are, the less likely we are to get sick or miss work or have healthcare issues down the road.
We have people listening to the show, different seasons of life, some of them nearing retirement or at retirement, others decades away from retirement. Advice on portfolio rebalancing and taking a look at it, especially after the year that we've just had.
Yeah. So every year, these last few months of the year have been difficult. But regardless of that, it's always a good time the year to just take another look at your portfolio. Is the risk that you're taking in your portfolio necessary? So does it line up with the financial goals that that are unique to you? And if so, do we need to make some changes to that? And that could be increasing risk, or in many cases, it could be decreasing risk. And then, one favorite of mine, you mentioned the age spectrum. On either end of the age spectrum, for younger people that are getting college acceptance letters, they're going to start rolling in the new year. Resist that temptation to immediately, in all that excitement about getting accepted to a university, to immediately accept that offer. That when a college has issued an acceptance letter, that is your maximum opportunity to negotiate a lower tuition bill. And it's not going to work every time, but it's no downside to ask. And then at the other end of the spectrum, if you're five years away from retirement, it's on the horizon. I'd love to see more people practice retirement before it actually shows up. And so by that I mean, Put a particular amount of money in your account each month that you think you're going to live on in retirement, and actually test drive it and see how it feels while you're still working and have time to make some adjustments.
Mark Horner, wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management. Website is fairhavenwealth.com. Joining us still to come, Monday Stock Picker.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. Joining us to cap off the year, Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, always good to have you with us. What's your first pick?
The first pick is HP, which is Hewlett-Packard, the symbol of HPQ. I like Hewlett for a number of reasons. One, it's a nice way to play that theme of kind of old technology companies that continue to reinvent themselves. Yes, it has its printing business and things like that, but you start looking at, the growth of 3D printing, Hewlett-Packard's going to be a major player in that, and it already is, and that's a nice growth market for them. The stock is cheap. It's down about 25% from its 52-week high. It's only trading at 9x its fiscal 2019 earnings estimates, and you get a dividend yield of 2.8% on top of the appreciation potential. I think it's a stock that will outperform the market next year. Our clients own it, and we like it at these prices. So that's HP, Hewlett-Packard, symbol HPQ, trading for around $20 a share.
All right, and how about your second pick?
Second pick is kind of continuing the theme of old technology stocks that continue to reinvent themselves, and that's Intel. symbol INTC. The stock's trading for around $47 a share. It's down about 19% from its 52-week high and trades at just 10 times 2019 earnings estimate. So again, it kind of falls right in that area of a company with good operating momentum that you can buy at a pretty cheap price, and you can get a dividend yield of about 2.6% on it. So it, as is the case with Hewlett Packard, you get paid pretty nicely to wait for the stocks to turn around, and I think next year can be a better year for both of the stocks.
Now, do you see in general there being a lot of opportunities out there, given the fact that the market's pulled back so much?
Yeah, there are. You know, it's you're going to have a little bit of a long-term time frame with some of these buys. And admittedly, when you do buy stock that's been beaten up, it doesn't always necessarily turn on a dime and sustain that move. But, you know, if you're somebody kind of who has some cash and you're looking for opportunities out there, I mean, these stocks as well as others, I mean, there are a number of stocks out there now that are trading at 8, 9, 10 times expected 2019 earnings. It have decent operating momentum, pretty good dividend flow. And, you know, so while this may not be the bottom for those stocks, I think in many cases you can start to nibble on them and put some money to work.
Chuck, before we let you go, what is the Dow theory telling us?
Well, the Dow theory turned bearish on December 14th. So what typically you will see happen after a bearish signal is that it's not unusual for the market to stage a pretty good rally. And, you know, we've seen a pretty good bounce here in the last three or four trading days. Today included, I wouldn't be surprised if it continues through early January. But typically after that bounce, what you see is a resumption of the downward trend and a retest of the recent lows that we had here prior to this recent bounce. So, you know, there's a trading rally here that probably does have some legs, but I still think this market will ultimately end up retesting the lows that it made here in mid to late December.
Thanks for joining us, Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, our Monday stock picker. Bloomberg checks the markets on this last trading day of the year. Next, WBBM News Time 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are headed higher. The Dow is up 179 points, or 0.75%. NASDAQ gaining 29. S&P up 13, or 0.5%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by 0.5%. The gains we have on the day still pale in comparison to the year-end losses. The last 3 months of the year have done away with the stock market's repeat record highs, and the S&P alone is about to end the year 7% lower than where it started the year. That's its worst yearly loss in a decade, and this month has been the S&P's worst December since the Great Depression. A pillar of the U.S. economy is not at full strength as we bring 2018 to a close. The factory index, which we get from the Dallas Fed, is down to a two-year low, and it's the fifth regional manufacturing index to pull back this month. Amazon wants Whole Foods stores in more places. The Wall Street Journal reports it's looking at retail space in Idaho, southern Utah, and Wyoming. And it's also working to offer delivery and pickup at nearly all of the 400 Whole Foods stores it now owns. Amazon shares are up about 2% on that news today, helping to lift the larger market. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.